For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Mid-American Gardener, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. This week, I'm joined by the ever-fabulous Jennifer Schultz-Nelson. Many of you know her as one of the Mid-American Gardener panelists and sometimes host. She's also a writer for the Decatur Herald and Review and writes her own blog, Grounded and Growing, where she shares the good, bad and ugly of her own gardening experiences. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Victoria.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, I'm excited to do this.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and I feel like we're going to take up this next 20 minutes very quickly. So tell me, you went to the University of Illinois and graduated from there, right?
Yes, I did.
And what did you graduate with?
I graduated with my PhD in horticulture back in 2003, and I studied sweet corn.
Really?
Sweet corn genetics.
There's not much going on with sweet corn in the Midwest, is
no.
there?
No. No corn anywhere.
So after you graduated, what did you do after that?
I spent a short time as a postdoc on campus working with a project with corn tassels, of all things, studying development. And then I moved on to Extension, and I worked at U of I Extension for 12 years teaching horticulture to everyone from kids through seniors and master gardeners and everything in between.
Fabulous. Now, what horticulture, right? What is your specialty? Do you feel you have a specialty?
Well, my specialty used to be plant breeding. That's what my PhD is in. I studied all about genetics and selection and all of that. That's always been my sort of interest. And there was a back in a another lifetime, it feels like I thought I'd be a plant breeder for a seed company. And
ooh.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was aiming for a long time. And then the more education I got, the more I was told I needed to be sitting behind a desk rather than having my hands dirty. And I didn't like that idea at all. So I fought kicking and screaming that image. And this job with Extension was posted, and it talked about community gardens and teaching master gardeners and being out in the community and teaching about plants. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. They're not going to make me sit behind a desk. And I enjoyed it. I worked over mostly in Decatur, and then later on in DeWitt County, where Clinton is the biggest city there, and then Piatt County in Monticello. And then after kids came along and life got a little too crazy for my own taste, I went out on my own, and I'm still doing a lot of things like Mid-American Gardener and still want to teach people. I enjoy teaching people about plants, and people get excited about it, and they stop me everywhere in all sorts of strange places, and people recognize me now from the show and from the Decatur paper and whatnot. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, being famous in the local Walmart, but it's fun.
Hey, if you got your fame from somewhere, that's all that matters, right? As long as you don't mind people walking up to you.
No, say. I've been stalked in the grocery store before and that sort of thing, and it's kind of funny when you know people recognize you. And
well, we love the fact that you're on the TV show and you're here. And I love it because I can pick your brains.
Oh, sure.
And we can help people with their questions when they write in.
Yeah.
Which we have a lot of calls and emails from a variety of folks. In fact, the first question that I have, I bumped into Jan in the corridor today. And she has lilies that she'd like to get rid of and remove and replace with something else because the lilies don't flower for long.
Mm-hmm.
The area that she's got them in, that she's looking to replace them, gets full sun from noon until around 6 p.m., and then it goes into shade. She rents the property, so obviously she doesn't want to invest a huge amount of money in this area, but she wants something that's easy to maintain.
Sure.
What do you have any suggestions for Jan?
Well, Jan ran into me as well, and
she was waiting for you to arrive.
She was stalking me at the door. We were talking about creeping phlox, and she was that is in bloom around now.
Yes.
All over town, and it will really catch your eye if you're driving by, especially if someone has an established planting and you just see this sort of sea of lavender or pink or white, and it's beautiful and it's very airy and She said, well, will that stay like that all season? Unfortunately, no. And that's one of the drawbacks to a lot of perennials, is that there's only a window of time that they're really in their prime and looking spectacular. Some bloom longer than others, but generally speaking, you have kind of a window. But I said, all is not lost. You can still plant phlox. Just look for the annual phlox. Annuals are going to do a better job of blooming for the entire season. And you can also get some other phlox that'll bloom, some tall phlox that'll bloom later in the summer.
You do realize you're bursting my bubble here, because I went out and I saw the beautiful creeping phlox, and I've just recut the border of our garden. And I was like, oh my gosh, let's put some creeping phlox in. It'll look pretty. And we've got some hydrangea trees that are growing, but they're tiny at the moment. So I thought it might be quite a nice bit of color. But they're not going to flower for long then.
No, they're going to look green the rest of the year after they're done blooming. It's not bad, though. But think of, we all tend to gravitate towards the things in the spring that are blooming, because we're coming out of winter. So you're like, oh, flowers, pretty flowers, I want them all. But so that's blooming now. So now keep your eye open for what's blooming later on. And so eventually, once you work...
So keep on adding, basically.
Keep on adding, yeah. Keep your eyes open. Keep on adding. Look for things that are blooming later in the season. That's kind of become a project for us at our house. And look for things especially that are blooming like in August and into September when everything else looks really tired. There are a few things that actually come into their glory later in the season. So then you can have this progression.
So if I keep on adding, at some point, is my garden bed going to explode? Can I put too many plants in there?
Well, you probably are, like most people, erring on the side of things that bloom mostly in the spring. So you may want to, over time, trade out keep your favorites and maybe upgrade. But, you know, I always tell people a garden is never finished.
Right.
You're always evolving and changing things around. My garden is way different today as a mother of two young children than it was 12 years ago, 13 years ago when I moved in, and it was absolutely nothing. And I was overeager and crammed everything way too full and had nothing but time.
Now, how old are your children? Are they showing an interest in plants and flowers
now? Oh,
yeah.
My son is 5 and my daughter is 2. My daughter will help water everything. My son waters everything as well. Yes. She'll be either naked or in a swimsuit all summer. I guarantee it. But they're both very helpful. My son is, of course, a little older, so he's understanding more. And he helped plant some onions this spring, and he's very excited about watching the baby plants grow. My daughter's not quite as understanding yet. She just knows playing with water is fun and mud is fun too.
But
and that's all good.
Who doesn't love mud pies?
Right. There's not enough mud pies being made in America. I think that's part of the problem.
I love that they're outdoors though with you.
Oh yeah. It slows down things, and sometimes it's frustrating when you just want to get something finished and everyone's tearing everything apart, but then you just have like this endearing moment where everything's calm and they're having a great time, and you have to just stand back and look. This is good fun with mud and water and plants. And
I wish I could say the same about my dog digging up the garden. It's not quite so endearing.
No. But once our garden starts producing, we enjoy picking and eating things right outside, and that's great too.
Yes. Now, George wrote to us on Facebook, and he says he has an invasive grass called smooth brome that he's been fighting for 50 years. Poor George. Originally, it was in the field around his house, and he thinks he unknowingly spread it into his garden. He continues to fight it. It's like Creeping Charlie, and he can't pull it without remnants just popping up again. So have you had any fight with a plant in your years of gardening? And is there anything you can advise poor George to do so he doesn't have to keep getting down on his hands and knees every year?
Oh, I read this question and I thought, oh, I want to introduce George to my dad because I think they'd get along famously. My dad has been fighting Creeping Charlie for most of my life. I'm well acquainted with the plant. And, oh gosh, I would come home and find all sorts of concoctions that he'd mix together and put in like an old Windex bottle. And I'd have to explain to him that that's really not what the university advises one to do. But so I'm well acquainted with Creeping Charlie. He ended up pulling it. That was what ended up being his solution. And he was just, it was personal at this point that he was just going to beat this plant if it killed him. And he spent like an entire summer with a dethatching rake. Combing it out of the lawn.
See, now I like Creeping Charlie. And I read that it's only a weed if you don't want it in your garden and you don't like it.
Absolutely. And people and settlers brought Creeping Charlie here on purpose for as a medicinal plant and as a rock garden plant. So,
I mean, I think it's quite pretty, but
it's all a matter of perception.
People in our household who really don't like it, like your dad and George.
Yeah, but personally, in my own garden, I just recently found a little bit of Creeping Charlie, and hopefully it won't move any closer to my house. But pink evening primrose, Onothera rosea, is one that I mistakenly brought home. It was that whole pretty plant syndrome. I was at a conference in Arkansas, and they saw this pretty pink, soft pink cup-shaped plant everywhere, and it was so pretty. And what is it? Oh, it's pink primrose. And I bought some seeds at the conference, and then later on I found a tiny plant. It was about 3 or 4 inch pot, and I planted it in my perennial bed at home, and I was so proud of it, and it is everywhere, and I hate it.
And you can't get rid of it?
I can't get rid of it. I've been pulling it for, let's see, the conference was in 2007, so this will be the 11th year been fighting it.
So what can George do? Is pulling the only way to get rid of his smooth bro?
What I've done with I've done it with the pink primrose, and I haven't quite won the battle yet. I had a bellflower, Campanula glomerata, that I fought for like 8 years. I just individually put proper gloves on and whatnot, and Roundup, and I just painted it on individual leaves. And it's kind of like my dad with the dethatching rake. It's becoming personal at this point, and you're just fed up. I pull as much as I can, and then whatever's coming up, and you're going to have to just keep at it.
With a tiny paintbrush, then?
Or a little sponge, or bit of a rag, or something. Something where you can individually apply it. If you've got, depending on what, if you're trying to save things around it. If you're not trying to save the bed, you could just kind of nuke the whole thing with glyphosate or another non-selective herbicide. Roundup is just a brand name that most people are familiar with. You can also do black plastic if you want to just kill the whole bed and start over. If you're not a fan of chemicals, you can put black plastic over and weight it down and just let the heat of the sun bake it all out. I don't know how
now,
long
how
it
long
would
does
take.
That take?
I don't know how long it would depend. I don't know how long it would take for this grass. Sometimes some of
sounds
those grasses
like George
are very
has been battling it for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
He's probably willing to try about anything. But repeated applications of those non-selective herbicides eventually should, the plant should run out of energy.
Okay. Well, George, hopefully that will help. Now, other annoying things. We've had a couple of emails, and one in particular from Valen from Clinton.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you can help her with her problem.
So she's looking for information on discouraging rabbits from eating her flowers, particularly her impatiens. And she's tried cayenne pepper and beaten eggs with water, and she's looking for more suggestions. We've had some issues over the years, and if you can get those repellents, there's like one brand name called Liquid Fence, any of those spray-on type repellents on the plants before they're eating them, it does a much more effective job. And also rotating the different repellents, because they get kind of used to a particular smell, and making sure that you're reapplying them. Not all of them are.
But it doesn't hurt them in any way.
No, it doesn't hurt them. It just tastes bad. But if they've already been eating the plant and they're not as discouraged.
Right.
They kind of get past the fact that it smells bad, and they know that it'll taste fine.
It reminds me of, I don't know if you have it in this country, biting your nails, and there was that stuff that you could paint on. My parents did it to me, and you get to the point where after a couple of tastes, you just deal with it.
Yeah, they know what's on the other side if they can get past that initial repulsive taste. But if you can get ahead of them and get it on there before they start chewing them up. Also, if you can exclude them in some way, if you can put some sort of fence. And people sometimes don't want to do that. They think it destroys the view or what have you.
Right.
Sometimes you can get by, like what I found, fencing things off early in the season, because the rabbits at our house tend to kind of zoom in on those fresh things that you've newly planted, because there's not as much growing early in the season. Mm-hmm. And then after, there's just stuff everywhere. You can maybe take it off and they'll forget it was there.
Yeah, they've already started going somewhere else.
Right. Right.
Now, we also get a lot of questions, or often get questions, about voles. I mean, another pest. What can people do to get rid of voles? Is there anything?
Oh, I hate voles.
And but people they're so cute.
Yes, but they're too much like a mouse, and I hate mice, and I'm deathly afraid of mice. People confuse voles with a V and moles with an M all the time, but just to clarify that they're two different animals that eat two different things.
Voles are tiny, though, right?
They're like a fat field mouse. They have field mice have very large ears and very long tails, mm-hmm. and voles have almost no ears, really, really short ears and really short tails.
Don't they have longer snouts?
I think you're thinking a shrew. Another rodent. Yeah. But voles will eat plants, and they'll go right after the crowns of perennials. And they, after we've had a lot of snow and the snow melts, and you look out in your yard and you see all these trails in your yard or in your flower beds, and you're like, what in the world was going on out here? That's most likely voles.
Really?
They like, their main predators are things like hawks. And so they spend most of their time in tall grass, but if they have the cover of snow, they can party and have a great time in your garden.
Now, will the repellent that you mentioned for rabbits work on the voles?
Not necessarily. I haven't had much luck with it that way. Most of the time, spring comes, most of the time they move away from my house and out to the where there's tall grass or back to the woods. I have had some years where they've stuck around and wreaked havoc, and I've put just mouse traps out to get them. You didn't hear that from me.
I had them.
They're not really mice are way more aggressive of getting in your house or wanting to live with people. Voles are kind of more opportunistic, and so we did have voles kind of accidentally find their way into our crawl space, and we use traps to get those. But they're much chubbier. They're cuter, I guess, if you like
if
mice.
You like
I don't
sort of
like
thing.
Them.
Well, so it sounds like there's not really much you can do with voles, right?
No, and I know there's services out there that will promise you the world and take your money. But even if you got every one of them this year,
they're going to come back.
There's a good chance. If you have a nice garden up by your house, they're usually going to come check it out over the winter. That's just what they do. And you can't blame them if you've got lovely plants for them to chew on.
Okay. Well, our next question was talking of topical things that we were putting on plants. Joe from Decatur left a voicemail, and he wanted to know if a pre-emergent that contains herbicides works on his flower garden. Is it okay for him to put it on fresh flowers when they're coming up?
Okay. Yeah, there's a number of distinctions. We were talking about this a little before. Using a pre-emergent herbicide is something that is going to act on any seeds that are present. And it doesn't distinguish weed seeds or flower seeds, so a pre-emergent herbicide will prevent any seeds present from growing. So if he's got flower seeds that he's nurturing, he needs to make sure that those are all sprouted and growing before he would apply something like that. But a pre-emergent herbicide is a great thing to use after you've weeded a flower bed and you just don't want to be weeding it every other week. So you would weed it really well, put the pre-emergent down, and you'd probably be good for 4 to 6 weeks.
So as long as his flowers have actually grown and they've started producing, then...
Now, right. And now a pre-emergent is not going to do a darn thing to any weeds that are there. It doesn't touch anything that's already growing. So, and it's worth mentioning, too, that if you have an idea of spraying broadleaf weed killer in a garden bed, in a flower bed, and I've had people ask me about this over the years, and those weed killers, those broadleaf weed killers, do not know the difference between a weed and a flower. And like we were talking about, sometimes the difference between a weed and a flower is a matter of opinion,
right?
Anyway. So keep that in mind. That those, if you spray a broadleaf weed killer on your flower bed, you'll likely kill everything in it.
Ah, so be selective.
Yes.
We also got another voicemail from Judith, and I'm not sure we can help her entirely with her question, but she had brought home from the hospital a beautiful plant that, unfortunately, there was no label on it. But it was, she loves it. It was great. And then a few weeks ago, she had an infestation of ants. And so she had to get rid of the soil and the pot. She did repot it in the only pot that she had available, which was slightly smaller than the one that she got from the hospital. New growth has appeared, but she's concerned that if she repots it now, the plant might go into shock. So should she wait, or can she repot it in a larger pot now? What's the general rule?
I would go ahead and repot it now. This is a great time of year to repot houseplants. This is the time of year they're starting their growth cycles and naturally wanting to grow. So this is a great time of year to put it in the proper size pot that it probably should have been to begin with, only an inch or two bigger than its original pot.
Now, I would love to know, actually, what her plant was. So, Judith and anybody else out there, if you have a plant that you don't know what it is, you can always email us photographs at yourgarden@gmail.com. And Jen does indoor plants.
Mm-hmm.
She IDs
them. Favorites.
One of her favorite things. So, Judith, if you want to email us photographs at yourgarden@gmail.com, we can perhaps identify what that beautiful flower is. Mm-hmm. But feel free to go ahead and repot right now. Mm-hmm. And the last question I have for you. Oh, no, we've got more. There's more. Would you, let's go ahead and do this one. Bill, Jen, you answer Bill his question.
Okay, Bill from Springfield, Illinois. He has grown snowdrop bulbs for many years, and they come up early in the spring. They are actually one of the first flowers that you'll see in the spring. He wants to spread them around elsewhere in the garden, and he wants to know, should he pull them out after the green part dies off and store them somewhere until fall, maybe in the dark, or should he replant them right away? And, you know, you could store them somewhere cool and dry until the fall, but I'm speaking from personal experience. If there's a high likelihood that you will forget that you stored them in your garage until the fall, there's nothing that says it won't hurt them to replant them right now once the green part has died, because you want to make sure that the leaves have done their job of storing up energy for next year. So
they won't just grow back again. I know that sounds like a silly question, but for people who aren't gardeners, if you put a plant, a bulb, in the ground, will it grow as the weather is warmer? Or does it literally has a cycle that it knows what time of year?
No, that's a really great question. Most of our spring flowering bulbs have a chilling requirement. So they need several weeks to months of below a certain temperature before they will flower again. So you're not going to have snowdrops in July if you were to move them now.
Yeah. It had crossed my mind, so I was going to be the one in the corner that put up my hand.
No, it's a good question. It's a good question, and I've learned at my house at least to err on the side of what are you more likely to not forget. So it's probably not going to do much except grow a few roots once you transplant it after it's done its cycle and it's. The greenery has died back.
So it'll just stay dormant.
Should stay dormant. And later in the summer, it'll probably put out a few roots and get established in its new spot. But I would just go ahead and do it now just so I wouldn't forget them in the garage. And in that case, they will probably die depending where you have them. And they're a small bulb, so they don't have much resources to exist on over in the garage.
Do it, Bill.
Do it. Just do it.
Just do it. And the other thing that we should do, and I need to remind people, is that Saturday, June 9th, Mid-American Gardener fans will have the opportunity to board a bus for a day of garden fun. The destination is the beautiful 79-acre St. Louis Botanical Gardens, and there is also a bonus stop at Allwerts Garden Center. The trip includes admittance to the botanical garden, lunch at Sassafras Restaurant, time to explore, plus interaction with master gardeners. Can't get much better than that, can you, Jen?
No, plants, food, and shopping. Sounds like the perfect trifecta to me.
So the garden trip is available as a thank you for a donation of $150 or more to Illinois Public Media. That's just $12.50 a month. What's that, 3 cups of coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Visit will.illinois.edu/willtravel today and reserve your spot. Have you been there, Jen?
I have been there several times, and it's worth every moment you can spend there.
Okay. As Jen said on the program last week, just do it. Go ahead.
Try it, you'll like it. Peer pressure.
Yes. Pick up that phone and do it or go online. And talking of phones, don't forget that we have a voicemail. You can call 217-300-8224 to leave a voicemail with your questions. If you wake up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. dying to ask a question about voles or anything else, we will be happy to present it to our panelists, either on the podcast or the TV show. You can also email us at yourgarden@gmail.com or message us via Facebook. There are so many ways to get through to us now. So, Jen, one final question for you. Let me think. So our first question from Jan was about what can she put in her garden? Easy perennials, maybe something with a bit of colour. If you were a colourful perennial, what would you be and why?
Oh, man, nothing like putting me on the spot.
Hey, that's the point of this.
Colorful perennial. Oh, Victoria, I'm trying to come up with... I know.
Ooh!
Well, I don't know if it counts as a perennial or if it's more of a shrub. It's kind of both. There is a series of roses that I really, really have come to enjoy and actually have gone out and bought a second one. They're out of the Oh So Easy is the series. And I will tell you that I have done absolutely nothing to this rose and it still looks wonderful and amazing and blooms its freaking head off. And so I have an orange one called Oh So Easy Paprika in my Illini garden, which is all orange and blue flowers. And I went out and bought...
How cool is that? You have an Illini garden.
Yes, I do. And it's hard to find orange perennials that are not daylilies. So that's something that any viewers or listeners out there can send me your favorite orange perennials that are not daylilies.
So hear that, folks.
Yes.
Email us.
Email us your favorites. But they had some newer ones, and there's one called Italian Ice that looked really good in the catalogs, and I bought it, and it's one of the few things I've ever bought that looks better in real life than in the catalog, and I think I might bring it on the show this week. It's so gorgeous.
Yes.
But yes, if I could be a colorful perennial, I would be that rose.
An Oh So Easy rose.
Because it's just, you know, no matter what you throw at it, it still looks good, and it still keeps on persisting.
So, straight out of the box, when Jen rolls out of bed in the morning, She looks fabulous.
I don't look fabulous, but I keep on trudging on and moving forward.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. I had a blast, as always. I learned something.
This was fun.
Good. You'll have to come back again.
I would love to.
You just have to watch and listen and download. You can find us on the web at midamericangardener.org. This is where the episode will be, and you can stream as many times as you like. It's also available on iTunes, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. Subscribe and rate with abandon. Many thanks to you, listeners, for joining us for another episode of Mid-American Gardener. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Broltz. Thank you for joining us, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Victoria.
I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another guest and more gardening tips and tricks. Until then, put on your gardening gloves and your wellies if you've got them. Thank you.